We'll go ahead and get started. So for today, I did like hit on some key points on Wednesday on the cardiac material that I taught. So for today, I'm going to touch on some of the endocrine that was covered. I do want to let you guys know that I went in ATI and created a cardiovascular assessment, and it's an endocrine assessment, and they should be available for you to start taking those as well. I also went in Canvas under the, let's see if I can find it, under the resource module for this week, and let's see. I'm gonna share my screen and show you what I added. Can y'all see the screen?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
So I added an endocrine worksheet, and then I added like some PDFs with some, just for the cardiac material to kind of help you understand that content. But this worksheet right here, with the endocrine conditions, they're opposite of each other. So if you're a writer and like you need to visualize and see the material, this will be helpful for you, because you could put like the hormone at the top and what the hormone does, and then put your two conditions right here and then kind of lay out what each of those conditions look like. So I did make that available for you all to use. All right, so let's hit on some of the key points for the endocrine disorders. Have y'all been able to listen at that lecture? Anybody?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
Okay. All right, so for acromegaly, with that one, we know that they have too much growth hormone. So when you're thinking about your manifestations for that patient, what comes to mind when you think about them? Like, they have too much growth hormone. So how would they appear?
Like a deep in the voice, see large hands and feet.
Yes, and face, like the facial structure. So they have those extra deposits in their face. So with them, usually this condition is going to be caused by them having a little tumor on their pituitary gland. So what did we say, what is that procedure called to remove that tumor off the pituitary gland?
Hypophysectomy?
Yes. And so who can tell me some risk factors with that procedure? Because what they're doing is they're creating an opening right up under the nose in this bridge area. They're going into the cranial vault, so into that safe area, and then they're removing that tumor off the pituitary gland. So what are some things that we need to focus on with that? What do we as the nurse need to monitor for with that specific procedure?
Optic nerve.
Definitely the optic nerve. So why are we focusing on the optic nerve?
It can put pressure if they like lean over, it can put pressure onto the optic nerve.
Right. And because they had to go in the area like behind where the eyes are, if they start bleeding and develop like a hematoma, it can affect the nerves and how they can see. So what type of dressing are they going to have?
A mustache.
Mustache dressing. And what do we need to monitor for with that dressing?
Probably glucose and protein on it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The clear fluid and the That could be for the, I think it's a sinal, I mean the spinal fluid.
Yes, that's correct. So if they complain and say, you know, hey, I'm leaking clear drainage from my nose. Okay, well, we need to get test some of that fluid. And if it has that protein and glucose, then that lets you know that it's cerebral spinal fluid. What does that ultimately put the patient at risk for with them having a CSF leak?
Meningitis.
Meningitis, because that means there's an opening to that area. So bacteria can definitely get in there, and especially, you know, that some people have staph in their nose. So that bacteria can introduce itself into that cerebrospinal fluid and cause meningitis. So that's why we want to be careful with that. So what are some do's and don'ts for someone who has had a hypophysectomy surgery? What are some things they can't do?
Don't blow their nose.
They can't blow their nose.
Brush their teeth.
Can't brush their teeth.
Bend at the waist.
They can't bend at all. Coughing, no straining.
And keep the head elevated.
Yep, let's keep the head of the bed up. And they're going to be at risk for fluid and electrolyte imbalances. So we just need to be careful and monitor for any signs of that. So let's talk about the difference between SIADH and diabetes insipidus. So with SIADH, what's going on? They're producing too much of what hormone?
ADH,
which is your anti-diuretic hormone. So if they're producing too much of that, let's talk about some of the things that these patients are going to be presenting with. So with SIADH, how did I tell y'all, what's the little saying I said that they're going to be? How that patient going to look? They're going to be what?
Soaked inside.
So SI for SIADH, they're soaked inside. So let's talk about it. What makes them soaked inside? Like, how are they presenting?
Too much fluid in the body, not in the blood, but the body's holding on too much fluid.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making any urine.
They're not making, and the little bit they are making, how is it?
Concentrated.
Too concentrated. So it's very sticky, it's very thick. So let's talk about some of those seven S's. Let's talk about some of them. We know that they have all that excess fluid in inside. They're making too concentrated, a little bit amount of urine. So how is the specific gravity gonna be with that urine?
May increase.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be high. What about their blood, the osmolality of their blood, the serum osmolality? Is it gonna be high or low with them?
Low.
It's low. Who can tell me why it's low? Why is their osmolality of their blood low?
My guess is just because they've got a lot of maybe like water retention, so it's just kind of thinning out.
And all of the water is in the where and not in the serum. So all of their water is in their body and not in the blood, which makes them have hypoosmolality. That's why they don't have enough fluid within their blood, because all of it is in the body. That's what that means. So because they have so much fluid inside, what is it doing to the sodium levels?
Decreasing it.
It's decreasing it. It's dampering them. So that's why we say they're soaked inside, because it's dampering those lab values. So the sodium is going to be low. All right. How's their blood pressure?
High.
Their blood pressure is high because they got all that fluid inside their body. So think about the blood just trying to, you know, circulate through all of that. That's just like you trying to, you know, if you're at an event and it's a whole bunch of people and you're trying to maneuver yourself through the crowd, you're irritated and overworked. So that's what happens with the blood pressure, the same process. It's got all that fluid that is trying to work its way through, which is ultimately causing the heart to work harder. So that's why the blood pressure is going to be up. So treatment-wise for someone with SIADH, they're soaked inside, got all the fluid inside. We got different treatments that we can do. What can we do for someone that has mild SIADH?
Some laces.
Fluid restrictions.
So we can do we can do LASIKs as long as their sodium levels are at least what?
Greater than 125.
Greater than 125. But 120. For mild, we focus on just doing fluid restrictions only. Okay, so who can tell me what the medication dimethylcycline does for someone with SIADH? What does that medicine do?
It's blocking ADH.
And so therefore, what is it causing doing to the urine?
It's diluting.
It's making it more dilute. So how should the head of the bed be for someone that has SIADH? And who can tell me why?
Is it 30?
Mm-mm. We can't sit them up that high.
It needs to be below 10.
Either need to be flat or below 10. And who could tell me why we want them laying that low?
Because it decreases the release of ADH.
It decreases the release of ADH. So in someone that has too much ADH, we don't want ADH being secreted a lot. So they need to be laid back and relaxing. So flat or below 10 degrees. So what if their sodium levels start to be below 120? Then what's our treatments?
We're going to give them fluids?
Yeah, what kind of fluids are you giving?
Hypotonic.
You said hypertonic. Specifically that 3%. And what's that 3% going to do? It's going to help replenish those sodium levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
But y'all know with sodium, we can't correct it too fast. So with sodium levels, those are corrected really slow. So they're usually on a very small rate with a 3% infusion. What type of fluid restrictions are they going to be on if their sodium levels are less than 120?
500 milliliters.
500. So a very small amount. All right. So now let's get into the opposite. So diabetes insipidus, that's the complete opposite of everything we just talked about. So what's going on with them? What's happening with ADH with DI?
Dry inside.
They're dry inside. They don't have enough antidiuretic hormone. So let's talk about the 7Ds for them. What are they doing?
Thirsty.
They're very thirsty. Very thirsty. But the more they drink, what happens?
They're dehydrated.
They become dehydrated, but everything is doing what is coming out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're drinking a lot and they're peeing out a lot, which is what's making them dehydrated because their body is not holding on to any of it. So how is their urine? What's the specific gravity going to be for their urine?
It's going to be low.
It's going to be low because that urine is very what?
Diluted.
It's very diluted. So, with them being dry inside, what does that make their sodium levels?
High.
It's going to be flat.
Their sodium levels are going to be high. So, they're dry inside, so sodium is going to be high. You know, I don't know if y'all, have y'all ever heard the saying, high and dry?
Sugar too high.
Huh?
High and dry, sugar too high, cold and clammy, need some candy.
So high and dry, Think about that. So sodium is going to be high because they're dry. When you're thinking about that. So their sodium, their osmolality, how their osmolality going to be?
Hyper. It's going to be high.
Hyper. It's hyper. So blood pressure wise for them?
Low.
What's their blood pressure? Why is their blood pressure low?
They peeing out all their fluids.
Mm-hmm. They're peeing out all their fluids, so they can't maintain their volume. So what's our choice of medication? What's that hormone replacement drug that we can give for DI? What's it called?
Desmopressin.
So we got to be careful though whenever we give them desmopressin, because it's designed to bring, it decreases their urine output, but it's also going to bring down their sodium levels. So we got to be careful because it can make their sodium low. So how will we know the goal of it is to increase urinary output. So what are some things that we're going to assess after administering it? How can we know that their body is responding to it? What are we going to be looking at?
Your blood pressure.
Yeah. Definitely the blood pressure.
Weights.
Heart rate. Not necessarily the weight with them, because their weight is not being affected. But intake and output, so the urinary output, the specific gravity and level of
consciousness.
Those are things that we're so what type of IV treatment do we do with them? As well for central DI,
hypotonic fluid.
Hypotonic, so that's going to be like D5 W, dextrose 5% in water. What was that condition? I'm trying to think of what show that was on. Which show was it? It was a do y'all watch Grey's Anatomy?
Mm-hmm.
No, ma'am.
I'm trying to think of what the episode was. Thing. What the condition is that guy had on that episode. It'll come to me. But anyways, okay, let's finish up. So now we're gonna hop into the thyroid. So what do we know the thyroid hormones kind of help with?
Growth and development.
Growth metabolism. And development. And what else?
Metabolism.
Energy metabolism. So when we get into talking about those different conditions, those are things you want to keep in mind with how either they have not enough or too much. So with hyperthyroidism, we know they're in a what? What kind of state are they in? Hypermetabolic state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Famous person y'all know got hyperthyroidism?
Wendy Williams.
Wendy Williams. What y'all know Wendy Williams appears?
Her eyes.
Swollen.
Definitely her eyes. Her legs were very swollen. And so some of the pictures that I put up in y'all's slide, like you can see the eyes, the swelling, and then the clubbing of the fingers. But these patients, they're in hypermetabolism, But with this condition, they're overly metabolized, which is why they're going to be experiencing some of those things. So this is why their blood pressure and their heart rate is up. They're having palpitations. And what do we know? How do Wendy Williams talk? Very fast. That's actually one of the manifestations of having that hyperthyroidism. So what's that complication called?
Graves' disease.
Thyroid storm.
The thyroid storm. Graves' disease is something that pretty much, and that's what Wendy Williams have. So that's the most common form. That's a form of hyperthyroidism. But that thyroid storm. So when can someone with hyperthyroidism experience that? If they experience what?
A stressor.
Or infection.
So have an infection. If they develop any trauma or if they go and have surgery, things that will put stress on the body can cause them to go into a storm. Even patients that have their thyroid removed can go into a storm because they're taking out that overly active thyroid. And so it's going to cause a storm, like a whole bunch of that. So, as far as implementations for someone going through a thyroid storm, the medications we're going to be given is going to help with what? Because they're in a storm, everything's up, temperature is up, heart rate is up, they're agitated, they're vomiting, they got diarrhea, so that they're going through all of those things at a very, very fast rate. So we're going to be giving medications to help block their sympathetic nervous system from firing all those different things. So during that time, it's going to be very important that we make sure that the oxygen stays good and that fluids and electrolytes are maintained too. So with hyperthyroidism, what's going to be the TSH? And I'm not expecting y'all to know actual lab values because your book gives you 10,000 different ones. So I just really want y'all to know, you know, whether it's increased or decreased or whatever. So with TSH, what do we know it is with hyperthyroidism?
Is it low levels?
Low. Yes. That's right. And the free T4 is going to be what?
Increase.
Who can tell me the medications for someone for hyperthyroidism?
Is it methimazole?
Methimazole, and it's one star with a P.
Methanolone?
Propylthioracil. That's the two anti-thyroid medications. Why do they, why can they do iodine? What's the iodine for?
What'd she say?
What does iodine do to the thyroid gland?
I know they used it for radiation or something. I'm trying to think.
Does it shrink it?
It makes it less vascular. So the thyroid gland is very vascular. So when they remove it, it can bleed a lot. So the iodine reduces it from being so vascular so that when it's removed, they don't have a lot of bleeding. And we know that we're going to be giving those beta blockers again because the beta blockers are going to help with what?
Decrease the heart rate,
nervousness. It also helps with them being irritable and tremors as well. So all of those are part of your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight. Those beta blockers help decrease all of those things. So if someone does their radioactive iodine therapy treatment, what are some things we need to educate them if they're doing that treatment.
Stay away from pregnant women and children.
Stay away from pregnant women and children. What if they live with somebody?
They need to separate themselves, like use their own bathroom, or if they can't, at least flush twice. Wash their clothes separate.
That's right. That's right. So they need to kind of isolate themselves. So, patient is getting ready to go for thyroid surgery. They have, their PACU has called and said they're going to give you a report on that patient. What do you need to make sure is in the room before that patient even rolls in the room?
A suction.
Suction,
oxygen, and what?
A trachea.
A tracheostomy tray. That needs to be in the room before the patient even rolls in there, because that patient may, you know, a complication is where their airway can be obstructed and they may start developing bleeding where it's compressing. So we need to have that at the bedside, because that's going to be the quickest way for the provider to establish an airway with them. So we need to have that at the in their room at all times. Okay. So let's talk about the opposite. So hypothyroidism. Tell me about it.
They're in a slow state.
Everything is slow. So versus someone with hyper, where they're needing to eat a lot, but guess what? They're eating a lot and they're still losing weight. They're not holding it. I skipped that one. Let's talk about the diet for someone with hyper. Let's go back to hyper for a minute. What type of foods these patients need to avoid?
Highly seasoned foods.
Highly seasoned and what else? High fiber and what else? Some we love.
Caffeine.
Because think about it, they have diarrhea. Like, they're going 24/7. They don't need no food. They got a whole bunch of Tony Sashners. They don't need a whole bunch of fiber. They don't need it at all because they already going. And definitely don't need caffeine. You know, caffeine kind of, they all do the same thing. They make you go. So those are things they cannot have in their diet. But we are going to need them to have a whole bunch of calories, because everything that's coming out of them, it needs to be kind of being replenished some. So for someone experiencing hypothyroidism, what do you notice about their face and their skin?
Are they the bronze? No, they're puffy.
Don't they have the moon face looking, like round face?
You thinking about cushions. They do have some swelling in their face, but they're going to have that dry skin. And they do have a puffy face, but they have that with cushions too. But they do have that puffy face. What do we notice about their eyes? What do they have? What's that called? Peri what?
Edema.
Periorbital edema. And they have like a mass-like affect on their face. So what they're experiencing is called myxedema. And that's just in where they have like extra, they call them mucopolysaccharides in their tissues within their face. And that's why they appear all puffy. So with this, with hypothyroidism, they're barely eating, but they're what? What's happening to their weight?
They're gaining weight.
It's going up.
They're gaining weight. What about their temperature? Like, they're always what?
Cold, intolerant.
They're always cold versus with hyper, they're hot natured. So what's the complication that they can experience with hypo?
Myxedema coma.
It's a myxedema coma. And so how can that be treated? What can you do? By what route?
IV.
IV. So they're going to, their consciousness is going to be low. Their temperature is not going to be normal. Their blood pressure is going to be low. They're going to be barely breathing. And so just as someone with thyroid storm, they have triggers as well that can cause them to go into myxedema coma. So, which are very similar. But with them, being in what type of environment can cause them to go into a coma? They're cold nature. So if they're in what type of environment, it can cause them to go into
a cold,
very cold, cold environment. All right, so with hypothyroidism, what's their medication they're going to be on forever?
Levothyroxine.
Their levels, and because they have two types, they can be either be primary or secondary. We know that TSH with hypothyroidism is what? Is it high or low?
It's
with
high.
Hypo is
it's low. High.
It's with primary is to if it's secondary, then it's what?
It's low.
It's low. All right. So with hypoparathyroidism and hyperparathyroidism, what do we know those mimic? Which electrolyte imbalance?
Is it calcium?
Calcium. So for hyperparathyroidism, their manifestations are going to look exactly like what? Calcium imbalance. Hyper or hypo?
Hyper?
Hyper. Hyper, hyper. So high levels of PTH cause high levels of calcium. So they're going to have hypercalcemia. Their signs are going to look exactly like someone with hypercalcemia because the parathyroid hormone helps with regulating calcium levels. So that's how you can easily remember that. So with hyperparathyroidism, we're going to have signs of hypercalcemia. So too much calcium. Okay, who could tell me the treatments for hyperparathyroidism? We could do IV sodium chloride, we could do some Lasix. And we just need to educate on dietary changes. So they need to be on calcium restrictions, right? Because their calcium levels are too much. Versus hypo. What's going on with hypo? Hypo is presenting just as what?
It's low.
Hypocalcemia. So do y'all remember the two those two signs that someone experiences with hypocalcemia? Y'all remember them from patho? What they call
Kowalski sign?
Shabosky.
And
Trochu sign. So where they touch the cheek and the cheek kind of go up, and then with their hands it almost look like they're throwing up gang signs. Dietary measures for them.
Dark green veggies.
Yep, dark green veggies, soybeans and tofu. Those are calcium rich foods. All right, so y'all tell me the difference between Cushing's and Addison's.
Cushing's is your glucose is high.
Okay.
And Addison's is
not enough steroids. Corticosteroid. Steroid.
Yep. So with Cushing's, they have too much corticosteroids. Okay. So that's why their blood sugar is high. So the different types. Their skin is going. Oh, I'm freezing. It's this Wi-Fi at this school. Can y'all hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was saying their skin is going to be very thin. They can easily bruise. That's why they got like the stretch marks everywhere. What about wound healing with them?
It's delayed.
It's going to be delayed. What about potassium levels? Can somebody tell me why their potassium levels are down and why their blood pressure is high? So, their potassium is low, and the reason is because they have an excess of cortisol. It's affecting their aldosterone, so, because aldosterone is supposed to help with excreting. So all that is, that's what I was just trying to see. So with them, we know they have too much steroid being produced. And if it's due to them taking steroids, can we abruptly stop them from taking the steroids?
No. Nope. You gotta titrate down.
They need to be gradually broken off of steroids. You can't just abruptly stop them. So they'll like gradually decrease their doses until they're completely off. So because we know all the different things that are affected, we need to make sure we're looking at daily weights on them, looking at glucose, because we definitely don't want them to start developing any wounds due to them having that delayed wound healing. So all of that plays a major factor when we're caring for those patients. So why do y'all think they give them a whole bunch of steroids if they have to have surgery?
Because steroids weaken your immune system, right?
No, I'm saying, so if they have in surgery to have whatever it is that's secreting the excess steroids, if they have in that surgery to have that part, if it's the tumor taken out, why do you think they load them up with steroids?
Something with your glucose? I don't know. Pulling straws.
Well, so if we're taking out something that has been overly producing excess steroids, we need to load them up, because as soon as we take it out, their body is going to be looking for them.
Oh, so that's like a shock factor, kind of, that they're no longer there.
It's going to help it. Yeah, it's going to help it kind of balance out. Okay, and so talk about Addison's. What did y'all notice about that lady picture? Her skin was very what? Bronze looking, right? And so with Addison's, they're the complete opposite of Cushion's. They don't have enough of those steroids. So completely opposite. So what's the complication of Addison's? What's that? What is it called?
I'm gonna butcher the name, but Addisonian crisis.
Addisonian crisis. So, and we know this one is brought on by triggers. So, what's the patient gonna look like with Addisonian crisis?
Hypotension, hypo.
Their blood pressure is low.
Fatigue.
They're gonna be feeling tired.
Hyperpigmentation, they have the darker skin, like you said.
I'm talking about the crisis. We talking about the crisis.
They have like severe vomiting, don't they?
Yes. And what happens with their labs? What happens to the sodium and the potassium and the glucose?
It all drops.
Except for the potassium. Potassium is going to do the opposite. Potassium going to go up. So, but sodium and glucose are going to drop, but potassium is going to go up. So because with Addison's disease, these patients don't have enough steroids, so they're going to be on lifelong therapy, right? Who can tell me the schedule of their medication? How are their medicines going to be scheduled? They'll take their glucocorticoid daily, and they'll take the fludrocortisone daily, but the fludrocortisone, they need to take it in the morning, and then they kind of split up their glucocorticoid. And y'all don't have to know that. I just wanted to see if y'all knew. Give me just a second, y'all. All right. So something else about with Addison's patients, what do they crave?
I want to say salt, but I feel like that's just my guess.
That's right. They crave salt, and it's okay for them to have a, this is the only time it would be okay for you to tell somebody to increase their salt intake. So it's fine. That's okay for them to do.
I was going to say salt because I did your ATI, and it was on there, and it said watch for dehydration because of that.
Uh-huh. Yep. Okay, and that last condition, hyperaldosteronism. So we know that they're secreting too much aldosterone. So it's causing their sodium levels to be what? Increase or decrease?
Increased.
Yep. Sodium is going to be up and potassium is going to be
decreased, I think.
That's right. Sodium up, potassium is down. So that's what's going on with that condition. Let's see. But yeah, I think the that sheet will be helpful to y'all. The little endocrine worksheet. That way you can kind of write them down next to each other and look at them. And that way you have them side by side because it's going to be the complete opposite with each one of those. Anybody have any questions in specific about the endocrine stuff? No questions. I came across like, because the book comes with like some nice resources too. Let me share my screen and show y'all pretty much what it does. It takes the key points out of that chapter and just kind of put it all, like just the valid key point of those conditions. I can add it into Canvas if y'all want me to. Let me show you what it looks like. This is it. Is this something y'all think would be beneficial?
Yes, please.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. I see if I can pull all of them from my chapters and Miss Lots, and I put them in on the resource page. I'll get those added in a minute. I'm gonna add them now. But any more questions?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And again, this is, it's recorded, so it's available for y'all to go back in. And the one from Wednesday is, recorded too. Let me save it as. Okay, I'm gonna go back through and download the ones from Ms. Lot and for from my cardiac part. All right, well, while I get these, go ahead and let y'all go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And y'all have a good weekend.
Thank you. You do the same.
All righty.